Hello, everyone. Welcome back. This is Chander in Palo Alto. Very sunny day today.
Hello, this is Arne in Oslo in the midst of a heat wave, at least for being Norway.
Is the heat wave helping you with more beer drinking?
It's not hurting, but it's also not seeing a huge uptick.
But you're like living normal life now, going out and meeting people and, you know, restaurant eating, etc.
Yeah, I'd say 80% normal.
Yeah. Somehow the economy is still not 80% normal. We'll see how long that takes.
Yeah.
So today we thought about discussing super apps, and that thought came to my mind after reviewing what Snapchat or Snap announced in its partner summit. So they have decided to copy WeChat, which is what we call a super app. So we'll talk about, you know, what super apps are, why they're not popular in the West and more popular in Asia, and what are the counter examples, especially Facebook, which is, you know, the most used app in the world, and then where we see that going. Does it sound good, Arne?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's start with, you know, defining what it is. What is a super app? So there's no clear definition, but basically to understand what it is, an app, a mobile app, which has other apps inside it, is a super app. So for example, WeChat, which is probably the biggest super app. Within that app, you have a news feed, you have stories, you can make payments, you can book a taxi, you can pay your utility bill, you can play games. So you can do all these things within an app. So that's what a super app is. And they kind of become platforms in themselves, meaning third-party developers can develop what they call mini programs or mini apps, or their different names, but basically things that work within that environment. Yeah. You want to add anything to the definition, Arne?
No, I just think of it as a multi-use case app. Mm-hmm. So it has multiple services bundled into the same app.
Yeah. So to give you an idea of the scale of how big it is, or how big WeChat is specifically. So people who are not familiar with it, it's app mainly popular in China, but also used in many other countries. It's owned by a company called Tencent. They have over 1 billion monthly active users, and they have over 2 million of these mini programs within WeChat. And 1 billion daily transaction happens within WeChat for these mini programs. 1 billion daily transactions. So it's huge. But what I don't know, or I couldn't figure out, is for these transactions, how much cut does WeChat take? It's got to be pretty small, but I'm not sure how much of the cut they take. Other examples are Alipay, which is also in China, which started out as credit card bill payment, or not credit card bill payment, but more of a payment app, but they evolved into do many other things, food order, ticket purchase, etc. Then there's Grab, which is also popular in Asia, Singapore, Cambodia, outside of China. So you can order food, taxi, delivery, payments. Then there is Gojek. That's also in Asia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Singapore, Thailand. Similar, smaller than WeChat, and number of services on the app are also smaller. And Zalo, that's another one popular in Asia. Same thing, less services available and less of a platform than WeChat. So WeChat by far is the biggest of all of them in terms of super apps. Yeah. So yeah. Why are they popular? So I think there are two clear benefits. One is for developers. You know, I think in many of our previous episodes, we talked about how in the app world, the biggest problem startups have is CAC, or customer acquisition cost. You have to build an audience, educate them, et cetera. But if you are a mini program within an app, you have built-in audience. So you get access to billion people in WeChat. And they help with marketing, promoting, launching. So your CAC is almost zero or minimal. I don't know exactly how they charge, but you have built-in audience. And then it's easier to develop on because you can use, most of them use HTML5. So you don't have to worry about, you know, using React and then another version for either, like when you develop an app, you have to think, oh, should I do native iOS and native Android, or should I use React? And then you have to maintain two separate code bases. So it's more work. And also, it offers you to test the idea before, let's say you do want to launch an app on your own and it makes sense to have a separate app, but you can test the idea by launching a mini program, see what the traction is. So for example, we talked about Quibi a couple of weeks ago. If they had just done something like that with Snap, they would have understood what the demand is. Are people actually watching the content, what the KPIs, how they meet their expectation, engagement, etc. They could have figured all that out without launching an app. So there are multiple use developer benefits for that. And then there are user benefits because you're basically eliminating clicks. So if I'm within WeChat and, you know, my payment is set up, I want to pay a bill or pay to a merchant, I just use my WeChat. Or if, let's say, you and I, Arne and I want to go to a movie together when he's back in Palo Alto and we are talking on Snap, we can just, you know, within the app, pull up the seat chart and pick seats and, you know, do that transaction within the app. So there are many apps when you do these group activities, planning, it makes a lot of sense to have that within the app. And also any basic, you know, e-commerce 101, always avoid, or not avoid, but reduce the number of clicks. So it does reduce number of clicks. So I think it makes sense for both developers and users, and it enhances value of the super app. The more people who are developers who are on it, the higher the cost of leaving that app, or switching cost. Make sense, Arne?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I do think the user benefit is somewhat of a mixed bag, though. I think if you look at a more traditional pure play app, They are oftentimes very focused on, you know, super low friction for a single use case and just optimizing that user experience, which is the user benefit. Whereas the more stuff you put into an app, the more cluttered it feels, and you can end up with multiple clicks to get to the right function point or use case within that. So it's, the user benefit is not as clear cut to me, and I think there are a lot of apps in the Western world who think differently around that point.
Yeah, so I mean, you can look at the data, billion transactions a day, but a lot depends on the design. you know, how it is designed. So that plays a key role. And we'll talk about it, how Facebook tried multiple times and they couldn't, you know, make it succeed. But it's people are using it. So that means there is a clear benefit and they have done it without, you know, sacrificing the core experience, what the app was for.
Yeah, I think there is an interesting angle to it. If you look at the super app examples that you mentioned, so WeChat started out more as a sort of a chat / messenger platform. Mm-hmm. Alipay started out as a payment service. Grab started out as something similar to Uber, which sort of ride sharing thing. Mm-hmm. And they built a big user base on their core function. And there's some element of this where you build the core function, you build a user base, now you might as well sell more services to the same user base. So even not only for the for the developers, but also for the app owners, there's a sort of increased lifetime value based on the acquisition you've done. And that's sort of a core element of it as well, I think.
Yeah. So within super apps, that's a good point, Arnett. There are two types, I would say. One that just combine all the services they offer together versus the ones who allow third-party developers to use it as a platform and develop mini programs. So the example you gave, I think Grab is just all the things they offer. It's not open to third-party mini programs.
Yeah.
And it's not like a new idea, and both you and I are old, or I feel old. You remember the walled garden when internet started on mobile phones? The mobile operator wanted to control everything, what you see, and you had to pay them. And just the ringtones was $5 billion market because people wanted to download ringtones of the songs. And there it was, like, you call somebody and that was what ring they hear. But the whole internet experience on the phone was what's called walled garden, where the operator decided what goes in that garden, what you can see. And AOL was similar in the early days. Yeah. So, but here I see the difference is it's like a unwalled garden, more like an open garden where anybody can go in and create an app. And it's available to everybody. So it's more like a platform approach, not a garden approach.
Well, I'm not sure if I agree entirely on that. Because if you look at, like, the history of the internet, mm-hmm. say, in the West, the web is very open, right? and it's very bad practice to you know, limit linking to other services, even if they're competitive, right? Mm-hmm. In the web world, if you look at how PC-based internet services are done in China and so forth, for example, the Tencent properties are much more restrictive in the traffic they port to competitive sites than would be allowed in the West, for example. So there's a much more aggressive approach to retaining traffic, even in an open internet world in China, for example. Now, if you go to the mobile, you can say that on an iPhone, it's not really a walled garden, but you're still, if you want to be an app, you have to be accepted in the Apple Store, and sort of Apple has some stringent rules, and they also want to have revenues out of that. So it's not an open one, but it's not a closed one either. It's somewhat of a hybrid. And I think if you look at like a WeChat, they've sort of put that app store kind of inside the app instead of serving many apps. And it's not entirely open to anyone to compete on that platform. I'm sure WeChat has very stringent rules on the commercials and the rules around being a mini program inside WeChat, similarly. So it's not a walled garden, but it's also not an open ecosystem.
So I don't know for sure like how stringent WeChat requirements are, but if 2 million mini programs are there, you know, it tells me it's pretty much open. Of course, it's China, so there it's another framework of what the market is, what is allowed and what is not. But the point I was making was the operators wanted to be the doors. You had to get permission to be included on, you know, what's how you go in, or AOL. And now Apple, Google have that through the App Store. If you want an app, you go through that door. The door through Apple is smaller than on Android or Google. And WeChat door, I think it's more on the Android side. It's more open, where you go through that as a developer. So it's not...
Absolutely. And the door, but there is a door. And the door is inside the app instead of in the App Store.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So they're, you know, working as a platform, just like, you know, Android is a platform, iOS is a platform. So they are now using the app itself as a platform.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, of course, there are T's and C's in all platforms, so they can take you down for whatever. So all that is there. But like the point is, it's not a new idea. Like the app stores did that, but before that, the operators did that. So it's from the beginning of like mobile internet, people are trying to do that. And many people are succeeding in different ways. So in China, they succeeded with starting as a messaging app. And in Asia, it's more popular. And we can now talk why it's not popular in the US. Yeah, or you have anything to add? Oh, actually, can you share, Arna, the how big the app market is? And I have some numbers on WeChat I can share after.
Yes, so I can say a little bit about the app market and the size of that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily say... tell the full story about what is the market for super apps. And I'll try to explain what I mean by that. So if you look at the worldwide app market, mm-hmm. It's depending on source, but let's say most sources point at it a little bit more than $100 billion. And how do you measure that? Well, that's revenue for apps through the app stores, and the app stores being for iOS or iPhone and the Google Play. Those are the two main ones on the worldwide market. And then you have some smaller app stores, and those are primarily China-based because Google doesn't retain control over Android inside China.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the revenue that goes through those app stores. And of course, of that revenue, Apple and Google takes a cut as well. So that's kind of like how you measure the worldwide app market. And so think of it as $100 billion. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to the super app market, that is much more difficult to because that's an opaque revenue. Because the app, so a WeChat app in itself is a free app. Mm-hmm. But it's still a huge business, simply because what you do through that app is, you know, everything from moving money to ordering food online or doing rides, booking rides or buying tickets. And so it's essentially a commerce platform where you play games, right? So there are all these sorts of services that are actually more sort of vertical services from the real world, so to speak. So the business inside the app can be really, really huge, although that's not really an app market per se. And that's why it's hard to put an exact number of what is the super app market size if you look at the services side of it.
Yeah, you're right. So it's when we say app market revenue, we're talking about or what you just mentioned, this $100 billion, that's more what like Apple, Google made through this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they
and the publishers of that.
So it includes all the
revenue the app publishers generate through the app store. So both the publisher and the app store owners revenue through the app stores.
But that seems low. But does it include like revenue of the physical goods apps where they don't give any cut? So like Uber is app, but they don't give any cut to Apple.
So exactly.
Uber revenue included in that?
No.
Okay.
So the money that's transacted inside the apps that the app store does not generate a cut of, that's not counted.
Okay. Okay. So it's the...
And that's why all the revenue in the super apps more or less are not part of the app store revenue. Because there are services like payments and ride sharing and things that you can transact also offline or sort of off app store. And therefore, it's not included in the app market sizing per se.
Yeah. I think I may be, numbers may be off, but I think I read last week, Apple announced that they have facilitated $500 billion of revenue through the app store. That includes everything. And that's just Apple. So we are living in an app world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that you raised very good points, Arne. Like it's hard to measure what it is. And but if you measure in terms of the business generated overall through the app, it's huge. It may not be counted in app revenue, but if you look at the big picture, because of these apps, a lot of new value is being created.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you look at Tencent's revenues, for example, you can see that they, for the public markets, they report things in, you know, payments, they report things in gaming, they do in social media, and they have these buckets, right? But it doesn't actually say through which channel those revenues are generated. And they have ad revenue and so forth, of course. But a lot of that revenue is actually, you know, facilitated through WeChat, even if it's not per se app revenue.
Yeah, yeah. So Tencent basically has two properties, or two main properties, WeChat and QQ. So I think QQ is mainly advertising. And all the value-added services, what they call in the report, is on WeChat. And gaming actually, I don't know. QQ I haven't used. WeChat I've used. Or I still use.
So, you're kind of right, but that's also a simplification because Tencent has a lot of, you know, more traditional web-based assets as well that you access through PC. And they're a huge games publisher that are, you know, distributed through other channels as well. So it's somewhat more complex, but in terms of their two main properties, you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, they're a big gaming company, you're right. Yeah. They produce a lot of games which are distributed outside of WeChat as well.
Yeah.
So to give, like, you know, with all the business they're facilitating, even if you look at all the revenue they have, let's assume all that is WeChat for a second. The total Tencent revenue I saw is around $50 billion. And Facebook revenue, annual revenue is around $70 billion. So we'll see, you know, long-term how it plays out. But Facebook just doing advertising is still making more money. Of course, their market dynamics, like Chinese market is lower ad revenue and compared to the Western world, and they cannot play there. So there are market dynamics in play. But just to give you an idea, despite being a super app, revenue is still lower of Facebook. There is currency and purchasing power parity. There are many reasons, but overall, it's still lower than Facebook.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So before we go and discuss why they're more popular in Asia, can I ask you how many super apps do you have installed on your phone and potentially use?
So in the US, they're not so popular. So I have WeChat installed. And then I have Snapchat, which is on its way to become super app. But rest, there aren't any, you know, available.
Right. So I have the same, although I could make a case based on our explanation of what it is, that there's a third one, and that's the browser. Because the browser can run web apps inside it. So in principle, the browser allows the same thing even more openly, but it's not as well packaged on a mobile experience.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that's a different discussion. But if you make browser, then everything can be accessed to through the browser.
Yeah.
It's in that way, Google is a big super app on the browser because you can do so many things with Google. But sometimes, yeah. I was thinking about this. This may be a slight tangent, but I found it interesting. Like, with all these years of, you know, history, they still can't make a good app. Like, outside of Maps, I don't have any other Google app on my phone.
Gmail?
No, I use the client, the Apple client.
Okay.
So they, well, see, like, there's
one. I would claim that they have two other of the most popular apps there are about. They are different than the super apps we're talking about, but Gmail and YouTube would be two of the most popular apps there are.
Yeah. Oh, YouTube I do have. You're right. So I do have two, YouTube and Maps. But with all the properties they have, somehow they, you know,
haven't. And they're also not super apps in the sense that we talked about them here.
Exactly. Yeah. But
just one more comment is that while it's primarily an Asian thing these days, there are examples also around the world, other places. So, for example, in Africa, there's an app called OPay that also has. It was started as a payments app, but also has a number of other sort of features to it, just like WeChat. And apparently, I can't remember the name. There are also a Colombian app that's taking a lot of South America. So it seems like it's doing better, somewhat broader in the in the large parts of the world, except from the traditionally industrialized countries of the West.
Yeah. So shall we talk about why that is?
Yeah.
So I think one of the reasons is in the West, or, you know, OPEC countries or developed world, internet started with the PC. Like, how we got access to the internet is through PC. And then the habit formed of, you know, doing things through browser and, you know, using web on the PC. In the emerging markets or Asia, Africa, et cetera, they went straight to mobile and they don't have a PC. So the only internet device they have is on the mobile, or is the mobile. So their first introduction to these things was through mobile, and then they, you know, started using things on the mobile. That's, I think, part of the reason that it just evolved that way. Because mobile came, but it took time for us to switch and to mobile. Like, some things I still do when I'm booking travel, I still do on the PC because I like that bigger screen. But for people in China, let's say, who don't have a laptop, they do everything on mobile. And the app makes a better user experience than the mobile browser. And the payment is integrated. So all it evolved that way, mainly because they went straight to mobile. Yeah?
Yeah.
So that, I think, is one reason. Another is we, because things happened here first, the market or usage is kind of not diversified, but fragmented. So everybody then came out with apps. So like I have Bank of America apps for banking. I have, you know, Uber app. I have different apps for different things. And there was no like unifying payment thing. So it's harder to create a super app and make people switch, you know, to the app you're used to using outside and make them go to use it inside, because it's hard to change behavior. In those countries, people were not used to, you know, using paying electricity bill through another app or on web. The first time they're able to use it through WeChat or booking tickets or all these things we do separately, their introduction to these things happened through the super app or WeChat. I think that's another reason.
I think that's, in my mind, possibly the most important reason, simply because that in the West there was an established services market for all of these categories. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like easy to just appify them individually. So if the majority of the market already has a bank, or at least the affluent part of the market already has a bank, you know, that bank gets appified and you continue. At least when this development started, then it's easy to bundle in a bank and offer it to somebody who doesn't have it.
And then if you, and from a developer point of view, in this case, it's a company, let's say you are Kayak or this Expedia, people are used to using your app. Why would you now go and build something and give all that data to somebody else? You already have a user base. So your incentive to go into, you know, Snap or Facebook or whoever and do this is much lower. You're kind of afraid. It's more risky because they can use that data and launch their own thing. And you're not getting any new users by going there because everybody's already using it. Yeah?
Yep.
Then I think the US companies, the big ones, especially Google and Facebook, or you can include Twitter, they focused on advertising market. Like they, you know, saw that it's more than $600 billion market worldwide, and how it most of it will move to digital because it makes sense. So they developed their business, you know, to target that market. Like Google bought DoubleClick, and it's a you know, a fragmented market, meaning it, you know, there are some global brands, but you have to establish orgs in every country to get money from advertisers from that country. So that became their focus. So they didn't really pay attention to other stuff because this they found was the lowest hanging fruit. I think another reason might be China is more, well, the Chinese people may disagree, but in terms of usage of apps and language, and China is more homogeneous, where people use the same language and it's same culture, than building something for the entire world except China, where cultures are different, languages are different. So these Google, Facebook had to build that infrastructure to address ad market in these countries and get people on in these countries. So it's much more complex task. And they wanted to do that because they wanted to go after the ad market. And I think some of it might be just the training, business training we get here in the West. You know, focus on the core and just expand that. Don't diversify and et cetera, et cetera. So it may be part of the training in the US culture that you do one thing well, and then, well, then hasn't come yet, but that might have something to do with it that they didn't explore. And we'll get into, you know, how Facebook tried multiple times. Apple, in some ways, games were kind of that mini apps or mini programs, especially Facebook. Remember, everybody was playing Farmville, Zynga, etc. They were very popular in the US, especially on Facebook. But now they tried to move it back to Messenger, then go back, but now I don't, then people started doing their games on apps on their own. So that didn't really, I don't know what happened, why Facebook stopped focusing on that or how it disappeared from there. Let's see. Yeah, I think this you mentioned, at a crude level, browser has that. So Google has that, where you can do multiple things. They started with search, then they added Gmail, then they added photos, they Google News, so all these things they added. You can say at a crude level, they were kind of like super, not app, but mix of things. And today you can search something on Google, you know, click on it and buy it with Google Pay. So it's similar, less click experience like WeChat. And Apple experience is actually, they're trying to do that now with shopping. So if on many of the newer websites, if you go and buy something, you can pay with Apple Pay, one click. They already have your address, credit card. So that's really cool experience. So Apple kind of, you know, tried that or is trying it with using Apple login within the iPhone. And when you send message now on Apple, you see all these other things you can send, songs, gift cards. So they're more making messaging more than messaging, but it's not really a super app per se where people can develop other programs or do more engaging things. Can you think of any other reasons, Arne, on why it hasn't happened in the West? I think I lost Arne, so he just is joining back. So can you think of any other reasons, Arne, that why it's not popular in the US?
I unfortunately had a connectivity issue here, so I'm slightly lost here, so I apologize for that.
No worries, but like, when you think of why they're not popular in the West, does anything come to mind?
I think the point that I alluded to initially, in that the original thinking in the West has been very much that single use case apps provide the most optimal user experience and the fewest number of clicks, and that's a success or a recipe for success. And so that's just how it's been done. And therefore there's sort of inertia around that thinking as the market has been built.
Yeah, so we covered that, thanks. So now let's talk about Snap, which that's how we thought of doing this episode. So there, it seems like a copy of what WeChat is doing, but I think copying is very common in the app world. Snapchat came up with Stories, then Facebook basically copied it and has it on Instagram and the Facebook app. Now, Snap has copied mini apps, but they call them just minis. So in their partner summit, they launched 7 of them, and the developers can develop minis using HTML5. Some of the ones they announced were Atom tickets, where you can buy tickets to a movie theater together. Let's say this example I gave earlier with Arne. If he and I can want to go and see a movie and we are talking on Snapchat, we can pick seats and buy tickets within the app. And then the Coachella tickets, Headspace, which is like a meditation app. Then you can have a joint class schedule and study together with notes, etc. So they're focusing on things which people like to do together. So facilitating that. But we'll see how that'll work. I think the huge advantage WeChat had was WePay, because you could make payments using WePay. So that created this huge opportunity to do all the other things, but Snap doesn't have that.
They do have it, that. It's just not as prevalent as the WeChat one.
Yeah, I mean, okay, they may have that feature, but how many people are using Snap Pay to pay for things?
Yeah, no, that's more a peer-to-peer pay operation than like a payments, commerce payment. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so it's...
I think there are two things. There are two things that are kind of interesting in this context. Mm-hmm. One is that the history here is that Snap generated a lot of momentum, and particularly with the young crowd. Mm-hmm. And so it was growing very fast. What did Facebook do? They went ahead and copied many of the popular features, first into Instagram and then later into Messenger and so forth, that sort of stalled the momentum a little bit and have generated momentum for Facebook apps. So Snap has been at the other end of copying. And now they're going to copy something from WeChat, which is kind of in the direction that Facebook has not seemed to be wanting to go before. So that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. I'll talk about that. They have been trying to go there for a while, but haven't succeeded.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is that when you come back to this point of ease of use, single use case, Snapchat, as opposed to a number of the other Western apps, are the one with the most non-intuitive user interface for the older generation, that myself, mm-hmm. who can't seem to figure out how to navigate that thing. So probably their segment of the market is well aware how to do complex navigation inside an app, and therefore probably has a higher tolerance for that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's not appreciated enough. Apps like WeChat and Facebook, which target a large heterogeneous population, it's much harder to create a UX that works for everybody. But Snap, which target a smaller segment of population, they can create a user experience that works for that segment very well, but doesn't work so well for, you know, people outside the segment. So if you talk to younger people, they love Snapchat. It's easier for them or intuitive for them. For us, it's not.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, let's talk about Facebook since we got there. So they, I don't know why they stopped focusing on gaming. There was big hoopla around Zynga. Basically, the stock dropped. I forget what happened. But they were big into using Facebook as a gaming platform, then they were not. But in 2015, they separated the Messenger from the Facebook app. And I think they were trying to copy WeChat at the time, because WeChat started in 2011. And I think 2013, they launched this WePay and started using it as a platform. So 2 years later, Facebook decided to do the same. The idea was to use Messenger as a platform So when they launched in 2015, they had 40 outside apps that they announced that were part of the launch. So some of them were, you know, chatbots where brands can interact with people directly, retail integration, meaning you can buy through the messenger. Then some that worked, like I think voice call worked. So a lot of people did use Facebook Messenger for voice calls. Then they also launched sending money, which I was testing today. I couldn't find it. Did they remove it, Arne? Do you know? Or do you see it? But now I don't see it. I'm not sure how well it worked if I can't find it.
Is this a request for the VC to send the entrepreneur some money?
Yes, all forms are accepted.
So this is, you know, is that because we don't find it, or so I've sent money with Facebook Messenger multiple times before, but I have not done so lately, and the reason is that this is a feature that's supported in the US, but it's not supported in Norway and multiple other markets. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's actually, I can't seem to find it in my interface now, but Facebook also now knows that I live in Norway. And so either it's been removed generally, or it's been removed before because I am now in a Norwegian version of the app, and I expect it's the last one.
So I, you know, went to Facebook to see why I can't find it. So now in my Facebook app, there is a, you know, in the menu, there's Facebook Pay. So now you have the ability to send payments. If you register or, I don't know, do something with Facebook Pay, then you can send money from Messenger to WhatsApp and maybe Instagram, but basically do this cross money thing, which makes no sense. Like, if I'm connected to you on something, I'll just use that. Why would I go to send a different app? But when I started thinking about, you know, what we will talk about, I thought we'll use Facebook as a counterexample of how they're taking this strategy of having an app for, you know, unique experience. Or, I mean, do one thing well, like you said. But then I found they have tried so many times and they just haven't succeeded. So they, you know, Facebook dating, that's not really working. Marketplace is questionable if that's working. They have tried multiple times making Facebook as a platform, but I haven't seen them succeed.
Well, I think the picture is somewhat more mixed. I think the marketplace initiative has more momentum. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you look at their history, Messenger used to be integrated into their main app and has now been split off. So the biggest one move they've ever done is a split rather than an integration. But I give you that they've tried lots and lots of things. What they have been super successful is at building multiple huge user base apps, because they have their main app, they have Messenger, they have WhatsApp, and they have Instagram, and they have interacted specifically around stories and these sorts of things, where they actually copied Snap and become very, very successful around those things.
So I would say they haven't succeeded in creating user bases outside of the main app. They have bought them. So they bought WhatsApp, they bought Instagram, they separated Messenger from the main app. And the separation, I would say, is, you know, successful because people use it. But who knows how it would have been if they had stayed it in. WeChat kept it in. But I think a lot of it is the culture, how they build products. Both in Facebook and Google, it's very iterative approach and it's small teams. So they do a lot of small things well, but doing anything big, it requires you know, like a big effort, which they're trying with Libra, but we'll see what comes out of that. They haven't, at least Facebook hasn't really succeeded in creating something new in-house that's been a huge hit yet.
I would agree with that, but although I would claim that Instagram is a huge success, and if you look at the number of users they had when it was acquired to what it is now, most of the growth has happened under Facebook. That doesn't mean that they invented the fundamental feature of it. Although Instagram stories, okay, they have 500 million users for that, and that wasn't there when they bought it. So they are managed, they do execute really well on new features sometimes. And then you can, of course, say, well, they stole that feature from Snap.
I mean, in this business, like, stealing is fine. It's not copyright protected. So, to some extent, everybody does that. But it's, and they are, like I was saying, are good at iterating. So once they have something, they have a lot of product managers who basically kind of bottoms up figure out what needs to be improved, and they make things better a lot, like newsfeed is better. But it's Instagram, it had momentum already, and maybe they made it better. What I'm trying to say is they haven't created anything new in-house that has been hugely successful. Yeah.
Not necessarily an original idea, no.
Yeah. So we'll see what, you know, how they evolve. It's still, I think, they have so many underlying assets which are unmonetized. WhatsApp, not much money is coming out of that. It had, like, some bad starts in India for, you know, money transfer or using it as a payment app, but they made huge investment in Jio recently, above $5 billion to get into that. And then I think last week they launched a payment feature in WhatsApp in Brazil. So I think since they're good at iterating, they will figure it out on these, on WhatsApp, they have a lot of users, how to add something. And then Messenger, I don't know, because they've tried so many times and it's been 5 years and not much has come out.
Yeah.
Okay, shall we summarize?
Let's do it.
You want to add? Okay.
I just looked it up, and Instagram had 50 million users when Facebook acquired it, and now they have a billion.
Yeah.
So at least they haven't screwed it up.
Yeah. It's there, like you were saying, we were saying, they're good at making incremental improvements, but it's not, they had momentum. I think Instagram would have done fine without Facebook. I think in summary, super apps as we define them are good for developers because it decreases their customer acquisition cost tremendously, reduces development time and complexity, and gives you ability to test an idea before you actually, if you want to launch a separate app, you can test that with mini apps. It's good for users, that's my view, because it reduces number of clicks for you to do something, but you don't have to go outside the app and go back inside the app. And then it makes group activity easier, planning. Arne has more nuanced view, and that is, in some cases it's good, in some cases it's not, yeah?
I will say on the developer's point, I would say generally more platforms that you can leverage is great, because, and the more reliant you are on one platform, the worse it is.
Yeah. That brings me to, you know, the next point, which is, it's good for developers and users in general, but I think it creates, for the ecosystem, it makes, you know, some players more powerful. So it may, at least in the West, may create some regulatory issues. And you see already, I think this week, Department of Justice in the US is starting an investigation into the big tech companies, especially Google, Facebook, on how they can, you know, reduce their power. So if super app means more power for these apps, so it may create a regulatory issue. And another side effect of this might be if, let's say, something like WeChat is in the US and everywhere, then the underlying OS becomes less important, and hardware. Well, you got to keep on hardware. Actually, you got to keep on improving to create UX better, but the underlying OS may become less important. The likelihood of that happening in the West are very low, but like you see in China, there's Vivo, Oppo, all these new players, available, making hardware, because people spend most of the time just in WeChat. If WeChat works well on that platform, then rest is not as important. Then I think payment issues, like most of the stuff happening, this is already, I see some changes in that space where, you know, Google, Apple keep 30% of digital goods payment. And within the app, and like, I think a few months or weeks ago, somehow now I can buy movies from Amazon or rent them without, on Apple TV. Before, it wasn't allowed. So they did some deal. So there's something shifting there. But if that requirement goes away or somehow changed, I think you'll see more adoption of these super apps, because a lot of the stuff is digital. And currently, if we are buying, let's say, we are using Atom tickets on Snapchat, and ticket may be a physical good, but let's say we're buying something digital, game, then you're paying twice. If you're a gamer, you're on mini app, you're paying something to Snap, and then Snap is paying 30% of that to, you know, Apple or Google.
Yes. So I think this is going to be a hugely hot, hugely contested area, and there's lots of discussion these days around a new email app called Hey on Twitter, and the approvals.
Say that again.
Yeah, there's a new email app called Hey. It's a little bit like Superhuman, but on Twitter, there's lots and lots of traffic about the friction they're getting for approvals for iOS and App Store. So what apps are allowed under what circumstances? How fast and where the revenue streams of things need to go on or off App Store is a hugely contested question just these days. And there's all sorts of these regulatory issues coming in here. So I think this is one area where you're going to see a lot of friction and arguments over the next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to observing. See what happens. Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Thanks, Arne. This was fun. Super apps. We are, you know, improving. So we can announce the topic for next week, this week. So if you have any thoughts, feel free to share with us. Next week is big week in the tech world. Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference happens next week, virtually this year. But so next week we'll cover highlights from WWDC.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to not only super apps, but just basic apps where the connectivity works so we don't get dropped. That would be also be nice.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Arno. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye.